Sunday's Turkish election is inconclusive, setting the stage for a presidential runoff.
Beklemiyorduk açıkçası.
He said, we didn't expect it, and frankly, we were very hopeful that there would be a change, but again, nothing has changed. So we are shocked. I don't want to believe in the result.
Plus thousands protest in Pakistan outside the nation's Supreme Court.
We hope to achieve rule of law in this country because decisions of the Supreme Court seem to be biased towards a political party and against a political party. And it has never happened that an accused on physical remand has been granted release by an apex court.
And a new sport is gaining in both popularity and disdain. Today is Tuesday, May 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Good morning. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Turkey appears set for a presidential runoff after an inconclusive Sunday vote. But the political momentum seems to be with incumbent Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who narrowly failed to secure an absolute majority, but is set to win a majority in parliament. Dorian Jones is up first.
Despite incumbent President Recep Tayyip Erdogan falling just short of the required absolute majority to avoid a likely runoff, Sunday's vote was a reason for many Erdogan supporters to celebrate. His challenger, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, was widely tipped as a front-runner in many opinion polls, but he lagged 4 percentage points behind Erdogan in preliminary results, despite soaring inflation and a cost-of-living crisis, coupled with accusations of a botched response to the earthquake. Istanbul's Üsküdar district, once a traditional Erdogan stronghold, is witnessing growing electoral opposition. It's the place Kılıçdaroğlu targeted with his broad electoral coalition. Reaction from voters is mixed. Local resident Merve, who only wanted to be identified by her first name. She says, there is this Tayyip Erdogan mentality, you see. It's always been believed he will save this country. He will save his homeland. That logic is always there. I want to break that mentality a little bit. We should open our minds. Change is good. But people believe without him, there'll be no roads, no bridges. The citizens will be hungry. İsmail and others are fishing for food or maybe some extra cash. He says he's still coming to terms with Sunday's vote.
Beklemiyorduk açıkçası.
He said, we didn't expect it, and frankly, we were very hopeful that there would be a change, but again, nothing has changed. So we are shocked. I don't want to believe in the result. His friend Cem says he isn't surprised, but worries about the prospect of a second round of voting in a presidential runoff. He said, I mean, the big fish swallowed the small fish again. It's as simple as that. Round two is something we don't like, but the people are ready. What else can they do? Voters on Sunday also voted in parliamentary elections, which saw Erdogan's coalition predicted to secure a comfortable absolute majority. That, analysts say, gives Erdogan a decisive advantage in the upcoming presidential runoff on May the 28th. Sezin Öne is an analyst for Politikyol News Portal.
Because you would want the president and the parliament be aligning in the same direction. So that's, of course... That would be something detrimental for the opposition and positive on behalf of Erdogan.
Kılıçdaroğlu faces a political mountain in the forthcoming campaign, with the political momentum appearing to shift toward Erdogan. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul.
In Asia, Thailand's election will result in a coalition government. Tommy Walker has that story.
Thailand's Move Forward Party won the most seats in Sunday's general election, obtaining 151 according to preliminary results. But for a political party to win outright and lead Thailand's next government, 376 votes are needed. Move Forward Party leader Pit Limjaroenrat has announced his party and four other political parties, including Pheu Thai, will form a five-party coalition that totals to over 300 seats in government. It's now up to the 250-member military-appointed Senate to decide whether they will back this coalition. Leader Pitta has since called for the Senate to listen to the people. This is Tommy Walker reporting for VOA News in Bangkok, Thailand.
Elsewhere, Pakistan's ruling coalition is rallying against the country's Chief Justice. Thousands gathered outside the Supreme Court demanding the Chief Justice resign for releasing former Prime Minister Imran Khan. More from VOA's Pakistan Bureau Chief, Sarah Zaman.
Pakistan's capital, Islamabad, once again the scene of protest. On Monday, the ruling alliance staged a rare, massive demonstration against the Supreme Court's decision to declare last week's arrest of former Prime Minister Imran Khan unlawful. Accusing the Supreme Court of double standards, coalition partners demanded the Chief Justice resign.
We hope to achieve rule of law in this country because decisions of the Supreme Court seem to be biased towards a political party and against a political party. And it has never happened that an accused on physical remand has been granted release by an apex court.
On May 9, paramilitary forces arrested Khan at the Islamabad High Court complex on corruption charges. His arrest led to 3 days of violent and deadly protests. After the nation's top court declared Khan's arrest illegal, the federal court granted him 2 weeks' bail and prohibited his arrest until Wednesday.
What does Imran Khan do? He incites the people. He incites his workers and the judiciary. You know, he puts tries to exert pressure on the judiciary. So we want our voices to be heard as well.
Maulana Fazlur Rahman, leader of a religious political party, called on coalition partners to gather in front of the Supreme Court on Monday. As negotiations to move the protest venue failed, Rahman's supporters broke through the gates to the high-security red zone. Along with police and paramilitary forces, a huge contingent of volunteer guards allied with Rahman's party maintained order at the site where thousands of people from across Pakistan had gathered.
Our responsibility is to not let anyone come close to important buildings and to protect them like we protect our own homes.
A member of Khan's party and its legal team called the protest improper and irrelevant.
Yes, you can hold a judgment, hold a, the reasoning of the judgment in, you can criticize it, you can hold rallies against it, but you can't hold rallies against a court or the judges for giving a judgment.
The pro-government march happened despite a prohibition on gatherings of more than 5 people. The legal advisor for Khan's party called it a selective application of the law, saying his party was not allowed to hold mass gatherings. Hundreds of Khan supporters were detained in violent protests last week. Sarah Zaman, VOA News, Islamabad.
We're following these other stories from around the world. Sudan's military chief says that he's freezing all bank accounts of a rival paramilitary force. For over a month, the Sudanese army and the Rapid Support Force have been locked in a power struggle that has forced thousands to flee to neighboring countries. Over the past decade, the RSF amassed a great amount of wealth through the gradual acquisition of Sudanese financial institutions and gold reserves. This comes amid attempted truce talks brokered by both the United States and Saudi Arabia. Rescuers have evacuated about 1,000 people trapped by seawater 3.6 meters deep along western Myanmar's coast after powerful cyclone Mocha injured hundreds and cut off communications. 6 deaths were reported, but the true impact has not yet been made clear in one of Asia's least developed countries. The United Nations aid chief said Monday that the organization is engaged in intensive discussions to keep alive the deal that facilitates the export of Russian and Ukrainian grain and fertilizer through the Black Sea, as the May 18th deadline Russia has set to possibly leave the deal draws closer. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
For the last 20 years, genetic scientists have used the first nearly complete sequence of a human genome, a map of almost all of a human's genetic material, as a reference. It was the result of the Human Genome Project, which involved a global team of scientists from 1990 to 2003. This blueprint of a human genome was recently given a major upgrade when an international group of scientists released their first draft of the human pangenome. Unlike the genome, which maps one human's genetic material, the pangenome is a sequence of genetic substances of 47 people from different ancestral backgrounds. According to a news release from the University of California at Santa Cruz, scientists can use it to identify genetic changes more accurately. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Ukrainian officials say that air defense systems were repelling Russian air attacks on Kyiv and in other areas in Ukraine on Tuesday. VOA will have expanded coverage on our website as well as on Tuesday's Flashpoint Ukraine. Earlier, the White House says that Russia is looking to get more advanced firepower from Iran to use in Ukraine. From the Associated Press, Sagar Magani reports.
The National Security Council's John Kirby says Tehran's provided Moscow with more than 400 one-way attack drones since August.
Russia has expended most of these UAVs, using them to target Ukrainian critical infrastructure.
And now it wants more.
Russia's interested in more advanced versions of those UAVs, more capable and more lethal.
The revelation is part of what the administration bills as a growing military relationship between Iran and Russia, which it says also relies on North Korea for arms. Tehran says it provided drones to Moscow before the Ukraine invasion, but not since. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Earlier on Monday, Ukraine hailed its first substantial battlefield advances in 6 months as President Volodymyr Zelensky won additional pledges of new long-range drones. Reuters' Edward Braun is up next.
The promise of weapons adds to a haul of Western arms for a counteroffensive against Russian invaders. Since last week, the Ukrainian military has started to push Russian forces back in and around the small eastern city of Bakhmut, its first significant offensive operations since its troops recaptured Kherson in the south in November. The battle for Bakhmut has become the longest and bloodiest of the war and has symbolic significance for Russia. Over the past half of a year, Kyiv has held its troops on the defensive while Moscow mounted its campaign, sending hundreds of thousands of fresh reservists and mercenaries into Europe's bloodiest ground combat since World War II. Kyiv is now preparing a counteroffensive using hundreds of new tanks and armored vehicles sent by Western countries since the start of this year. Their aim is to recapture the sixth of Ukraine's territory that Moscow claims to have annexed. Russia said it did not believe the added British hardware would change the course of the conflict. Zelensky's trip to Britain was the latest stop on a tour that saw him visit Rome, Berlin, and Paris, pocketing major weapons pledges along the way.
Reuters News. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb continues our coverage with NATO's number two official cautioning China not to provide military support to Moscow as Russia continues its brutal and illegal invasion.
As allies help bolster Ukraine ahead of an anticipated counteroffensive, NATO's Deputy Secretary General Mircea Joanna is cautioning China not to do the same for Russia.
We have not seen yet signs of China delivering military equipments to helping Russia, but we know that discussions are going on. This will be a very, very serious decision by China that will be affecting not only their relationship with us, but the reputation of China in the rest of the world.
After a static winter, officials say Ukraine is now conducting shaping operations ahead of the planned assault.
We also see a fluid situation along the front line. We also have indications of some territorial progress from the Ukrainian side in the western side of Bakhmut. But I think, and we know that Ukraine has the capacity to launch a successive counteroffensive, but we also know that Russia has the capacity to put forward a significant resistance.
Military experts believe the war in Ukraine will increasingly pit quantity against quality in the coming months. Admiral Rob Bauer is NATO's military committee chair.
The Russians will have to focus on quantity, larger number of conscripts and mobilized people, not well trained, older material, but large numbers. The Ukrainians focus on quality, with Western weapon systems and Western training. That's the big difference.
But NATO's Supreme Allied Commander Europe, General Christopher Cavoli, says that while Ukraine has severely degraded Russian ground forces, Moscow's air, sea, and cyber forces remain largely intact.
In other domains, the degradation has been much less noticeable.
NATO's Deputy Secretary General told VOA the alliance remains committed to Ukraine.
The number one thing is to help Ukraine win this war.
President Volodymyr Zelensky says Kyiv aims to retake all Ukrainian territory, while vowing not to attack Russian land. Carla Babb, VOA News, Washington.
The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says America's leading cause of overdose deaths is synthetic opioids, mostly fentanyl, which can be up to 50 times stronger than heroin. U.S. law enforcement says illicit fentanyl is cheaply made from chemicals, mostly coming from China, trafficked through Mexico, and then smuggled into the United States. VOA's Natasha Moskovaya looks at fentanyl in Washington state in part two of her series, and includes how U.S. law enforcement is reacting and responding to the threat.
Illegally modified automatic weapons, hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash, and 27 kilograms of fentanyl, all seized from a Seattle apartment as part of a nationwide law enforcement operation against synthetic opioids. Jacob Galvin, a special agent with the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration in Seattle, says fentanyl is deadly in especially small doses.
That amount will fit on the tip of a pencil. And that's, again, that's 2 milligrams, and that's a lethal dose of fentanyl.
Homeland Security Investigation Seattle lead agent Robert Hammer says the drugs seized here came from Mexico through the southwest state of Arizona.
For fentanyl-related substances, the binding agents, the presses, the bolts, the dyes, we've seen a lot of those coming from China.
Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Mao Ning says there is no illegal fentanyl trafficking between China and Mexico.
The two countries have smooth channels for anti-narcotic cooperation, and relevant departments in charge on both sides have maintained good communication. China has not received any notification from Mexico that it has seized controlled fentanyl precursors from China.
The White House says it is building a global coalition to prevent illicit drug manufacturing, detect emerging drug threats, disrupt trafficking, address illicit finance, and respond to public safety and public health impacts.
We're doubling down on our work to disrupt synthetic drugs, which have claimed too many American and Canadian lives. By bolstering our work together in the North American Drug Dialogue with Mexico and building on a new global coalition against synthetic opioids, we're working to get these killer drugs like fentanyl out of our communities.
Galvin says some fake pills are made to look like their legitimate counterparts. Others are dyed in rainbow colors to make them more attractive to younger customers reached on social media.
They use emojis as different codes. You don't have to have a normal conversation with anybody. Your conversation can just be a series of emojis of, you know, what you want, how much it is, where to meet, and that.
Galvin says drug cartels see no downside to selling fentanyl-laced pills that could kill their clients because the size of the market they can reach on social media is so great, it's worth the risk. Natasha Mozgovaya, VOA News, Seattle, Washington.
Our series continues on Wednesday with part three of this five-part series. And finally, pickleball is the fastest-growing sport in the United States, and it's attracting people of all ages. It's simple and can be played in small places. But not everyone loves it. Maxim Moskakoff rounds us out.
Pickleball, indoors and outdoors, this paddle sport is growing across America. The number of pickleball players in the U.S. grew by 159% between 2020 and 2022, according to the Sports and Fitness Industry Association. That totals nearly 9 million players. The hype is real, says Helen White, with the American Pickleball Association for Northern Virginia and Washington.
So I just finished a week where I taught 15 classes, and that would be about 90 students. My youngest was about 7. My oldest was probably in their 80s. The courts are too crowded. When you have 20, 30, 40 people waiting to play on a court, that tells you something.
Pickleball is a kind of hybrid of tennis, ping pong, and badminton. The court is 2 times smaller than tennis courts. The net is low, and the ball moves much slower. Real estate professionals say more residential complexes are adding pickleball courts to attract buyers.
It doesn't take much
financially to create a pickleball court. It's a lot cheaper than putting in a pool, a lot cheaper than maintaining a clubhouse, things like that. So it's financially viable, financially attractive, and more and more people get involved in it.
But there is one problem. When the paddle hits the ball, it makes a loud, whacking noise. Recently in Chicago, people living next door to a park with a pickleball court created a petition demanding that the court be removed. One of the signatories, John T., who wished to remain anonymous, told VOA that he lives with his wife and two daughters near the park.
Sometimes I feel trapped, like it's, you know, it's a beautiful day out, it's 70 degrees out, and we have our windows shut. We can still hear it through the windows. We can't even take a nap. It's just relentless.
In an email to Voice of America, pickleball player Lisa Davis fought back, saying, quote, "This is not a children's park. It is ruled by the city of Chicago as a public park for all residents, regardless of race, age, or gender, to use." To help solve the problem, engineer Bob Anitich founded Pickleball Sound Mitigation, a company that researches and advises communities on ways to quiet the game. Anitich himself, an avid player and a qualified pickleball referee, has already worked with more than 100 clients from the United States, Canada, and Europe.
So we began to study paddles and balls to reduce the sound level of paddles and balls by selecting quieter equipment. We can look at sites all over the U.S. and in other countries on Google Earth and look at the distances to homes, and we can recommend different kinds of barriers that might be used to reduce the sound level.
What's clear is that pickleball isn't going away, so finding ways to play quietly may be the only long-term answer. Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Washington.
And that's going to do it for us today. On behalf of the entire team at International Edition, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a terrific Tuesday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United Nations Security Council unanimously adopted a resolution condemning the Taliban's repression of Afghan women and girls and calling for the swift reversal of its indefensible edicts. The international community, declared U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Linda Thomas-Greenfield, will not remain on the sidelines while the women and girls of Afghanistan are deprived of their human rights and fundamental freedoms. The Taliban has reneged on its promises to the international community and to Afghan women and girls by implementing oppressive measures against them, including barring them from working with the UN and NGOs and from attending universities and secondary schools. These draconian measures only prevent Afghanistan from achieving stability, economic prosperity, and future growth. They place women and girls at an increased risk of gender-based violence and sexual exploitation, and they hinder life-saving humanitarian aid from reaching Afghans in desperate need. U.S. Ambassador Robert Wood, alternate representative for special political affairs, called the decision to deprive Afghan women and girls of their fundamental human rights indefensible and not seen anywhere else in the world.
Muslim-majority countries have spoken out against the Taliban's rationale for these decisions. In January, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation emphasized that Islamic law calls for women's education, work, and participation in public life.
The Taliban's edicts are causing irreparable damage to Afghanistan. They erase women and girls from society, said Ambassador Wood. They also move the Taliban further from its desire to normalize relations with the international community.
The United States continues to urge an inclusive political process among Afghans that leads to a representative government, a government that is accountable to its people and fully reflects Afghanistan's rich diversity, including the meaningful participation of women and members of minority communities.
The United States would like to acknowledge the extraordinary courage of women and girls in Afghanistan, declared Ambassador Wood. Despite the Taliban's mounting restrictions and intimidation, they continue to support their families and contribute to their communities. The United States applauds the many Afghan communities and individuals who have strongly and bravely stood up in support of Afghan women and girls.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.